Accession number 27248, Mr. Charles Pay, Reel 3. We're talking about your time in Antwerp, round about September to December, January, you know, at the end of the year. You would just tell us about an incident where you found two Germans or not.
No, we didn't find them. They found us.
Tell us what happened.
They were on a high building, and the next thing we could hear was bullets ricocheting, you know, and the crack of a rifle. And there was these two or three, I don't know how many there were up there, there weren't many, blokes who had got through to Antwerp from the Battle of the Bulge. They'd kind of got ambitious, I suppose, and left their buddies behind. And their buddies weren't so ambitious, I'd gather. But they were all three shot. They were all shot. There was I don't think the Belgies nor the squaddies, our squaddies, were very patient with the Germans.
How did you get on with the Belgians, the civilians?
No problem. No problem. They were just blooming glad we were there, weren't they?
Did you see much of them?
Oh, yes. Yes. You had the locals working on the ship and coming and doing jobs for, you know, on the ship. And trying to befriend you, because we had better supplies than they did, of course. We had food that they couldn't get, of course. So they were very friendly, and I didn't mean that in any derogatory manner. I mean, I would do the same if I was hungry. I'd try and make a friend of somebody who's got food. That's life.
Did you have any, what were your sort of recreations like? I mean, I know it's under a lot of bombardment. I mean, was there anything you could do, any nightlife or bars or anything?
Yeah, nightlife. All the bars were open. That was what used to worry us about, this running up to the big plate glass window and standing there waiting for the blooming V1s to come down.
What were the bars like? Did you go?
Oh, they were typical continental cafes, you know, with the a cheap girl if you want one, you know, and that kind of thing. And music and drinking and coffee or what have you. What do you want, you know?
Did you drink much then?
No, I didn't drink a lot. I went home with my stoker friend.
What, on leave?
No, we got the ship back to Blighty.
When was that? In 45, January 45?
Yeah. And he was going to get married, so he insisted that I go to Birmingham with him to have a bit of fun, you know. And that was when I drank. I did drink a lot that night. And then when we had another drinking session the next day, and then I made my way down to London. And the war's over. VE, anyway, the European war's over.
What do you remember about that?
Well,
VE Day, you know.
I got out of the train at about 10 p.m. and everybody was celebrating and women wanting to pick you up and all that. But I suspect that there would be suspected that there would be a charge. So in Leicester Square, you're not going to find many girls in those days taking the chance of picking a man up. So I behaved myself and got a train home. And then I went to the pool. I didn't want to go back on that bloody Blisworth.
Why not?
Well, it was a terrible ship.
What was so terrible?
Rolled like a pig. It really did roll. It had one of these old-fashioned tall chimneys. And I was seasick every time I went, every time that we sailed out of port. I was seasick all the time. And
how bad? I mean, how bad?
Very bad.
Would
very
it last
bad.
A long time, or?
Eh?
Would it last a long time, or?
What?
The seasickness.
Oh God, yes. It was permanent. It was permanent. And anyway, I went down to Avonmouth for a ship. I don't know why, but I thought I'd have a look at Avonmouth. I didn't like the look of what was in London. And I walked into the pool down there, and they said, well, you've got 2 days extra leave because of VE Day. I said, well, I'm not going back to London again for 2 days. I said, so have you got a ship? They said, well, we've got the Port Phillip.
The Port Phillip?
Port Phillip, yes. Lovely ship.
What type of a ship was she?
She was a refrigerated cargo ship. I suppose, I don't know, about 8,000 tonnes, I don't know. She had a ex-Royal Navy captain who knew how to scrounge guns. And I'd never seen a merchant ship like this.
In what way? Tell us.
Well, on the forecastle, there were 3 12-pounders. 3 12-pounders, if you please. And then there was a gap, the you know, the holds. And then up on the bridge, you had 2.5-inch twin-barreled water-cooled Brownings, which were lovely guns, reliable. And then on the stern, he had a 4.5-inch gun, if you please, a naval gun. I don't know where he scrounged them from. And on top of that, you know, you have these things built up in islands on ships, don't you? And on top of that, he had another gun, I know. I can't remember what it was. And then on top of that, he had the pillarbox, the rockets.
Now, was this was unofficial, was it? I mean,
it was unofficial, yeah. I mean, you were officially armed with a pair of machine guns and a pair of automatic cannons kind of thing, you know, the 22mm Oerlikon. But that was all you got. You were a merchant ship. But he had the lot. He had half a dozen Bofors guns on the bridge, on the boat deck. Bofors, for God's sake. And he just used to send me, used to make arrangements and then send a party out to pick up the guns, you know. He had friends in high places.
Now, what was the crew? What was the composition of the crew on this type of ship?
You know? Oh, we had a large crew. It was a large crew. It was,
roughly.
From memory, I suppose we had about 12 stewards. You were carrying 12.
And you were a steward.
Yeah. You were carrying 12 passengers, or 24 passengers, depending on whether they wanted a single berth or a double berth, you know. And you had, I suppose, about 10 or 12 deckhands who were always kept busy maintaining everything on the deck. Engine room staff, I think, was something like 15. And about 5 officers, 5 deck officers. And that was about it.
Now, what was your job as steward? It's very different on this ship because
oh, yeah.
There wasn't just you on the Blissworth, but this time there was plenty of stewards. What was your job as steward then?
I was bedroom steward.
You were?
A bedroom steward.
Now, tell us about, what does a bedroom steward do?
Look after the passengers and you also serve meals for the passengers. You look after their cabin, you wake them up in the morning with a cup of tea or a cup of coffee, whatever they like. And you disappear tactfully and come back when they've when you see them on the deck, and you clean up behind them, you know.
So it's just the passengers you dealt with, not the crew or the officers?
Oh, I didn't deal with the crew, no.
And the war was still on, the war with Japan was still on?
Oh, yes, yes.
So what happened? Was it a happy ship?
Oh, yeah. Bloody fine ship, lovely ship.
So, where were you going?
To Sydney and to all stations south, you know. In other words, cruise around of Australia, and then when you're full of frozen meat, you make a heading for home.
So what do you remember about the voyage out to Australia?
The voyage out to Australia was, I was sick.
You're still seasick on this one as well?
Yep. And one day they were looking at me, you know, the lads were looking at me, and they said, look, you can't carry on like this, mate. We're going to give you the cure. For Christ's sake, do. And they gave me every toilet, bathroom, washroom, every toilet facility had a salt water tap as well as a fresh water tap, and they poured me a tumbler full of salt water and they said, come on, drink it all down, don't you dare let any of it miss your mouth. And I was desperate, I really needed to, you know, so I just did it. And then I went down on my knees and I really was sick. And that was the last time I was ever seasick. That was a permanent cure. I'd been out on pleasure launches round the Land's End and all that kind of thing, tossing all over the place, and never a problem.
Now, what do you remember about the voyage?
I enjoyed it. I went back for more, actually.
Anything happen?
They put me on the Port Napier. Now, the Port Napier...
Hang on, we're on the Port Phillip.
No, well, you go ashore for leave after a five-month voyage, you see.
So nothing happened in the voyage? It was just a routine voyage to Australia?
It was a routine voyage. The Americans used us for... various items.
What do you mean?
Well, we would carry stuff that they wanted, and wherever they were hitched up, you know, wherever they were anchored, and we would offload what they wanted. I never knew what they wanted. I think there was a lot of ammunition and stuff like that, you know.
You've lost me a bit as to where you are. You go to Australia, but you seem to be dealing with the Americans.
Well, they were still fighting. And they needed help, so... They hadn't got the cargo ships that they wanted, because they were sending them all to us. And we were there. So they said, you know, can you give us a hand? And we would stick what they wanted up on top of our hatches... And then we would just swing them over. We would tie up alongside.
In the Pacific?
In the Pacific, yeah.
It's quite a diversion, though.
What's the diversion? We used to head straight for Panama Canal. And that was the Pacific, wasn't it? Wasn't a diversion. It was a shortcut, actually. Better than going around the Horn. And far better than going around Good Hope, because I used to wonder I wasn't seasick when we went round that way.
Now, anything happen with the Japanese?
Well, now you've got me. You see, they asked me at Cunard House, would I Port Napier? You see? So now the original Port Napier had been blown up. It had been converted into a mine layer. And nobody knows whether it was torpedoed or whether a couple of mines clashed with each other and off they went. But you'd better take our Port Napier, you see, the new one. Was that Liberty ship?
But that would be after the war finished.
No.
The first voyage can't have been 5 months then, if you see what I mean. Because the war ended in August and you were in England before you joined the Port Phillip in May 1945. So you can't have been on a 5 month voyage. And
joined the Port Phillip in May 1945. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I suppose I would have. You see, you get these yarns and you just shrug your shoulders, you know. So anyway, we bought the Port Phillip home.
Okay, what happened next then?
You've got me. I've happily forgotten the ships. I know I went...
Well, this Port Napier you were talking about, when was that then?
Well, that was just after the Phillip.
And was it a similar type of ship?
Oh, yeah. Well, similar. It was a what's the name? What do they call them? The Americans were building...
Liberty ships,
that's right. It was a Liberty ship. It wasn't half as good as the...
So it wasn't a refrigerated cargo ship?
No.
And where were you going on the Port Napier?
On the, on to Australia. No, hang on, New Zealand. Didn't go to Australia, second voyage.
And what happened on that voyage?
Nothing very much. Nothing very much. We just did our duty and that was it. Just sailed the ship, brought it back.
And that the war must have ended by then. I mean...
I seem to remember Auckland Docks, a headline... of the nuclear bombs. And that was when the war was ended, wasn't it? Yeah.
Just after that, 2 days later. Yeah. That's August 1945.
I suppose so, yeah. I do know that when it was announced, we got to see when it was announced that the war was over, all we had was the news of the bombs. When we got to sea and it was announced that the war was over, we had an automatic pilot on the ship, and it was a good job we did, because the captain went to the tannoy. He said every man on this ship was drunk out of his mind, he says, including myself. He says, and that's never going to happen on any ship of mine ever again. I do remember that.
Anything else happened on the Port Napier? You were still, were you a bedroom? What sort of steward were you on there? There wouldn't be guests on that.
No, right? There was no guests on that. It was just a general serving the officers and that, you know, that was all it was. So you only had a few stewards. Very few. Busy all day. From morning, from 6 in the morning to, I suppose, about 8 at night.
So what was a typical day like? Take us through it. As a steward, what would you do from the, you know, when you woke up in the morning?
First of all, you would scrub all the floors of the interior of the ship. No decks. The decks were for deck hands to look after. So everything was scrubbed, washed and polished and all that kind of thing, ready for a day's work, you know. And serving meals, collecting the meals, serving the meals. You had to go to the galley, you picked up what was required and you made your way to the saloon and served it. And they had the life of Riley, the officers and that kind of thing. They were like lords.
How did you get on with them?
Lovely. It was a happy ship and everybody was happy on it. There was no problem.
Now, I mean, as a war museum, obviously we mainly do the wartime period, but we are still interested in following through your career a bit, but obviously not in such detail. Tell us about the other ships you're on, any of particular interest, you know.
Well, I stayed with the Port Line for quite a long time. I went on the Port Fairy, Port Caroline. That was an interesting one, that was.
Tell us about that.
Well, she was fit for the breaker's yard. And we were coming back from New York in a typical Atlantic storm. And everything went wrong. And the ship started rolling. The seas were immense. You look at the top of a wave, you looked up like that. I mean, it was quite humbling. And it was an old ship, very old ship, and she was an old coal burner. And all the coal dust that had gone down into the bilges had now blocked the pumps, and we're now shipping water, and we can't pump it out. And a few rivets have popped, and the water tank, the fresh water tank, is now polluted with salt water. And so everything was, I mean, don't ever try and drink a cup of tea that's got made salt water. Coffee's fine, but if it's tea, oof, it's terrible. And the ship was in such dire straits that every bunk in the ship was saturated with water. The water was coming in everywhere. And I thought she was going to go down, I really did. But the captain steward, he had his own steward, the captain. The captain steward went up to the bridge. And the captain had taken charge of the ship, you see. So I said, when he came down, I said, how's the old man up there? He said, the bloody fool's on his knees praying. He said. I thought, yeah, that's good. That's very encouraging, that. Yes, I thought that was very encouraging. But we managed to get through it. It was the tail end of a hurricane, and they don't last forever. I mean, if you're heading west to east and that's blowing up to the north, you're soon through it, you know. So we just plodded on and got out, and I think they broke the ship up then.
Any other stories like that? That's a good story.
I started branching out.
In what way?
Different ships, you know, different lines, because I did like the port line, but I maybe felt that I ought to have a change, you know.
Still as a steward, though?
Still as a steward, yeah. And I went to I can't remember the name of the line. Booth line. And it was an old, I think it was another coal burner. Anyway, it was a fair old ship, it wasn't bad. But the voyage was bloody terrible. We went 1,000 miles up the Amazon, in high summer, and the humidity was unbelievable. You took photographs, nothing came out. the stuff had all melted. The
and what ship was this called?
Hillary, SS Hillary. And we went all the way up to, God.
And what were you going up there for?
Cargo. A lot of stuff up there. There was a lot of farming going on up there. I'm just trying to think of the name of the town. Good Lord, I thought I'd never forget that. Anyway, we got off badly with the bosun and all that. Everybody was, it was a miserable ship. So everybody went ashore in, I think it was Pernambuco. And this was only a couple of hundred miles up the Amazon. And we all went ashore in a sort of a mutiny and went to all the local brothels. We overnighted there, and they needed to get away the next day, you see, and the poor bloody bosun had to go around every brothel in the place, find out who was there. That was our punishment for him. And then we carried on going up. It was a very strange business going up the, what's the name, the Amazon. If they've had plenty of water, you have to look out for floating islands. Yeah, the water the water undermines the banks of the river. And the banks of the river are so solidly packed, so overgrown and solid, that they stand up. They stand up and float down the river with the trees standing up. You see a blooming island coming towards you. And there was only one thing that you could do, was wind up the engines full speed ahead and hit it so hard that you cut it in half, you know. It was an incredible experience. I'll never forget it. Never forget that. And of course, you never knew what was going to drop out of the trees when you hit it. Yeah, exactly. But it was a huge experience. I mean, you know, you as you come away from the coast, as you get a couple of hundred miles up, it narrows down dramatically, and you find the back of the stern of the ship is rubbing against the jungle. As you take to get round the corner, you know, incredible. And then you had all the stories about the what was piranha. And we had a ship's doctor on that ship, because it carried quite a lot of passengers, and we had a ship's doctor, and he had to go ashore to sign that there was no health problems. And, God, he was a rather large man, a fat man, you know. And he got into a rowing boat, did it wrong, not being a seaman, he did it wrong. And he capsized the boat. I thought, oh, Christ, piranhas, you know. Nothing touched him. He managed to get out, they pulled him out. But it was very interesting.